Kaffee in seiner besten Form. Mit Cubo wird jeder Kaffee auf Knopfdruck zum Genussmoment. Denn mit der neuen Cubo One Kapselmaschine von Chibo genießt du feinsten Spitzenkaffee aus besonderen Anbaugebieten. Vollmundige Aromen dank innovativer Press-Brew-Technologie und über 17 Sorten Kaffee für jeden Geschmack. Erlebe Premium-Kaffee schon ab 29 Euro. Entdecke jetzt die Cubo-Kapselmaschinen in deiner Chibo-Filiale und auf chibo.de.
Welcome to the State of the Race. It is Friday, September 13th, 2024. We are 53 days out from the general election. We are only 18 days away from the VP debate. And early voting in Pennsylvania begins in 3 days. That's where we are. We're basically in election season already. Coming up in this episode, did Harris really win the debate? How bad was it historically? And how much is any of this likely to matter? It's a debate-focused state of the race today, but first, our key metrics. And honestly, it's an interesting thing to look at. If you look at the Real Clear Politics polling average, kind of like the most basic measure that you're going to find out there, Kamala Harris is at 48.5%. And Donald Trump at 47%. So a slight lead for Kamala Harris in the popular vote. However, the electoral count, of course, is another circumstance. And a lot of times people will, there's a bunch of different election models out there. And right now it's kind of difficult to understand, frankly. I mean, if you look, the easiest example of this is probably Nate Silver, who has Trump as a 60% favorite to win the election in his election model that is up right now. However, the place that he founded and used to work at has their own election model. That's 538.com. And they only have Trump as a 45% favorite. What to make of all of this? Why is there such a big split? There's a ton of models out there, and we'll get into that here in a little bit more detail in a couple of minutes. First, I want to do the quick candidate updates. The main one from Donald Trump is he has rejected a second Kamala Harris debate. This is somewhat understandable from his perspective in a couple ways. Number one, the moderators were so bad for this debate. It was despicable, honestly. And it was probably the worst debate moderation I've ever seen in my entire life. The ridiculous fact-checking, some of the things that were actually true, fact-checking Trump on and never fact-checking anything that Kamala Harris did, despite dozens of lies that she told during the debate. It really was pathetic and despicable. And, you know, as a person, I certainly understand not wanting to do another debate as Donald Trump. And of course, he was basically just attacked and called every horrible name in the book for an hour and a half. No one wants to be in that situation. On the other hand, you know, Kamala Harris really isn't well defined. She's only been seen a couple of times. She's been on script every time. Our debate preview shows talked about how Donald Trump really needed to work hard to get Kamala Harris off of her spots and into uncomfortable situations. And Kamala Harris needed to work hard to get Donald Trump off message and get him into a back and forth and bait him into sort of nonsense, you know, talking about things like rally crowd size. Well, we can kind of see who won the strategic battle there. Kamala Harris was able to bait him into multiple conversations that had absolutely no value whatsoever for Donald Trump. And maybe he's just thinking, there's no way in that environment I'm going to get done what I want to get done. It would be better for me to just be going out and doing rallies. I have been of the belief that the more Kamala Harris is in front of the American people, the more likely it is people will not like her. And a debate is, because she won't do any real interviews, is the only way you can really do that. Now, he did not perform up to his best in that particular debate, and that was an issue. But still, I would be of the thought process to get her out there and make her talk and put her in positions that make her uncomfortable. Because if you remember back in 2019, she did have a debate or two that she was pretty good in, rocketed to the top of the race in the prediction markets, and then fell off because her performance went down and down and down and down. She just doesn't have a lot of depth. There's not a lot to go to there. And I would say more debates, get her out there as much as possible. Now, look, Donald Trump has already won the president of the United States. He's already been the president of the United States. He's already won an election. He knows what he's doing, I suppose. It's not the way I would go about it, but I mean, really, the normal way to think about this is the only way to reason to skip debates is number one, you're way, way ahead, or number two, you think you might lose that debate and it gives you a downside risk. Now, obviously, Trump, I don't think, is way, way ahead right now, and it's a very close election. And also, I don't think Donald Trump thinks he's going to lose, you know, but he believes this is the right thing to do. So we will. This is the world we're going to be living in. But I would want Harris in front of the American people as much as possible. On the Kamala Harris side, well, who supports Kamala Harris among religious groups? A lot of them just, you know, not Protestants and not really Catholics. But everybody else seems to really like her. The way this breaks down, Protestants support Trump 61-37. Now, there is a big exception there for black Protestants, 86-11. They lean toward Harris. So an interesting split there on racial lines. The Catholic vote goes also in a close margin to Donald Trump, 52-47. White voters, 61-38, large margin there. Reverse true for Hispanic voters, 65-34. They favor Kamala Harris. Jewish voters on the side of Kamala Harris, 65-34. Religiously unaffiliated is 68-28 Harris, which includes atheists, agnostics, and a group they call nothing in particular. So you're basically agnostic to being an agnostic, I think, if you're in that category, which is just kind of funny. But the support for Kamala Harris coming from minority groups and non-white Protestant and Catholic voters. Okay, so let's go to today's focus. And this is really where I want to spend the most time, because we're talking about a debate here that everybody watched, I think, and it wasn't, I don't think it went the way that you'd want it to go if you were a Trump supporter. I think you can overstate how bad it was, and we're going to get into that here in a second. I think Trump missed some opportunities, went directions I didn't love, but do I think it was a Trump versus Biden catastrophe, which like it was for Biden? Was it the same for Trump? No, I don't think it was that at all. And a couple of different things about this. Now, you may have seen the CNN poll, which said Kamala Harris won the debate among people who watched it 63-37. A couple interesting things to keep in mind when you think about these post-election flash polls. Number one, Republicans never win them. I mean, this is something that has been true for as long as I've been in politics and talking about politics. It's just not a thing that Republicans do well in. Now, you could say this is because of biased polls. You can say because Democrats just react more to these polls. You can come up with a bunch of different descriptions to it, but at the end of the day, Republicans never win. They win presidential elections, but they almost never win presidential flash polls. The only times a Republican has won a debate, according to these flash polls, since the year 2000, so we're going back a quarter century here, the only wins were Trump versus Biden. You remember, of course, that one. It was so bad, Joe Biden had to drop out of the race just a few months ago, June 27th. So Trump won that one handily. And then Romney over Obama in 2012. The first debate, Romney won that pretty handily, and the polls reflected that. Every single candidate, every single other debate, every single time, Republicans have lost. That is, I mean, it just shows that what for whatever reason, these flash polls right after debates are massively tilted toward Democrats. So you look at that and you say, well, you know, what should we take from this, right? Why is it that big of a thing? You know, the other part about this is Trump hasn't particularly done all that well in previous flash polls either. As I mentioned, he's lost these. In fact, obviously, he's lost every other one except for the Biden one. So his record in these polls after debates is 1-6. Now, the man won one presidential election, lost another very closely, and has been leading or tied in the race against Kamala Harris pretty much this entire time, along with being way ahead of Joe Biden. And yet in these polls, he's only 1-6. So when you step back from that, you realize that these things haven't mattered that much. Let me go through these a little bit for you. There was a debate on September 28th, 2016. And I'm going to take out, to make this simple, take out the undecideds, because there's various numbers of undecideds, or, you know, I think they tied. I'm going to give you just the percentage of people who made a decision, right? You picked, you thought Donald Trump won or you thought the Democrat won. September 28th, 2016, 32% said that Trump won. 68% said that Clinton won. Then October 9th, 2016, they were back at it again. 40% said that Clinton or that Trump won, and 60% said that Clinton won. They came back again on October 19th, 2016, and that one, similar results. 39% said Trump won, 61% said that Clinton won. Then we go to 2020. Now we're in the ends of COVID here. Of course, Biden is doing his basement campaign, and they have a debate on September 29th, 2020. Again, that number sounds pretty familiar. 39% of people say that Trump won, 61% said that Biden won. They came at it again in October 22nd, 2020. 42% said that Trump won. 58% said that Biden won. You look at all of these Trump polls in history and you come up with an average result of all of these debate polls. And the average is 39%. 39% say that Trump won. 61% said his opponent won. So you're basically at 39 or 40% for Trump throughout all of these. Now, of course, he absolutely wiped the floor with Joe Biden in that first debate, 69% to 31%. So huge victory for Donald Trump there. But then go to this previous poll. Where does this one with Kamala Harris stack up with all of those other examples? Honestly, sounds almost exactly like them. There are three polls taken about who won that debate in the aftermath. This is the September 10th debate earlier this week. In one poll, 37% said Trump won, another 39, another 36. So basically, this is the same debate that you've seen every other time Donald Trump has debated. Really, the only one that was much worse was the first Hillary Clinton debate. Everything else has been right around the polls. The average result from the September 10th, 2024 debate was 38% of people believed Trump won, 62% said Harris. Again, the average was 39% for all of his previous debates. So there was almost no change at all. This was a very run-of-the-mill Trump result, according to people who watched it in these polls. And that makes you think, well, wait a minute. When these happened previously, one election Donald Trump won, the other election Donald Trump lost very narrowly. Both elections were very, very close. This was just Trump normal. This is how he performs in these polls. It's how it normally goes. This was not a superhuman effort by Kamala Harris by any means. It did do some things that Kamala Harris needed to get done. She did clear the bars that she needed to clear, which you would have loved to see the opposite if you're a supporter of Donald Trump. You would have loved to see. There was an opportunity here for a knockout blow. If Donald Trump was able to put a massive gap between him and Kamala Harris, it was probably pretty much over. He didn't get to that standard. She was able to, I think, calcify some of her support. But let's not go crazy here as the media is. This was not some out of the ordinary, bizarre event that's going to change the election. And I think it's important to note that the changes from these debates are nowhere near as massive as we used to think. The average debate bounce and change in these polls is about a couple of points, 2.5 points. That's about it. And since this was a pretty normal result, I would say that's the outlier of what you can expect. But this has tightened quite a bit over the years. If you go back to the initial Reagan debate in 1984, against Mondale, he's coming off a pretty successful term, has a wide, wide lead in the polls, an 18-point lead in the polls. And he has his first debate where he's off kilter. He's a little off his game, looks a little confused, maybe seems a little old. Of course, the next debate, he comes back with the whole line about, sit here and focus on my opponent's age and inexperience when talking about Walter Mondale. He came back in that second debate, but after the first one, his polls did drop. He was up 18 points and it dropped to about 11 points. If you go to the Obama debate that I mentioned earlier, where Obama actually lost pretty significantly to Mitt Romney, it went from Obama plus three to Romney plus two. There was about a 5-point move. But you see, went from 7-point move in the Reagan debate, only a 5-point move in that Obama debate. Clinton, in that first debate against Trump, Clinton, and that was the one where she won by the largest margin in the polling, that moved by like a point. It really didn't do much of anything. And I think, if anything, 2016 is probably the best example of this type of debate movement. But if anything, we're probably more set in our ways with these candidates at this point. We are at a place where there's just not a lot of movement. I think the max range of these candidates is like a Trump plus five to a Harris plus five. Every result of this election is going to fall somewhere in that realm, somewhere in that range. To give you an example of that, the biggest blowout in the history of blowouts, right, was Trump over Biden. I mentioned the poll, 69-31%. It was bigger than any of the defeats Trump had supposedly taken before. And as I mentioned, these polls really favor Republicans, or excuse me, Democrats. So, you know, there is already a massive gap there. And what happened? On the day after the debate, Donald Trump led the polls by 0.8%. When Biden dropped out, he led by 3.3%. The biggest blowout in the history of all debates led to a 2.5% swing. There's just no room. There's no room to move. We are talking about only a couple of percent that will make the difference between Donald Trump or Kamala Harris being president. And so even a big blowout victory, even if you think of it that way, you're probably only looking at a couple of percent switch in the vote. And if that is what we're looking at, most likely when it comes to the aftermath of this election, we will probably not be looking at this debate as a major factor in the result. It's possible we see a swing in the polls. Most likely that swing goes away. Very certainly, Donald Trump will have many, many opportunities to undo whatever polling bounce Kamala Harris gets out of that. And I think it's important to have that perspective here, because at the end of the day, I've heard a lot of real pessimism over the past few days. It is very possible that Donald Trump loses this election. I want to be very clear about that. It is very possible he loses it. In fact, you might look at him as potentially a slight underdog in this race right now, but it's very possible he wins it. This is a razor-thin election right now. There is almost no gap between these candidates. For all intents and purposes, this thing is currently tied. And that makes people really uncomfortable, because we're talking about the future of this country. We've seen the amount of power Democrats will use from the executive branch. And so it's really, really impactful to all of us. And so people get really tense about it. But at the end of the day, this election's really freaking close. And we don't have any answers right now. So as I say that, let me give you my totally made up scorecard feature. This is where I just basically give my vibes about what I think the state of the race is. I just told you it's very, very close. If the election were held today, I think Donald Trump would squeak out a very, very narrow victory. 51.1% chance to win is my exact specific example of what I think is going to happen. But of course, the election is not held today. If the election is held when it actually will be held, I have Donald Trump at 52.9% chance of winning. Again, really, really close. A very, very slight favorite. But I will tell you, this is a fun feature where I just kind of tell you what I think. It's just me based on, you know, my vibes. But I thought one thing that would be interesting, and we're going to introduce something next week I think you're going to like. If you've made it this long in this podcast with this many numbers, I know you're going to like it. There is a real difference between a lot of these models right now. I mentioned 538 and Nate Silver as an example. I mean, there's a 15-point split between those two numbers. Why is that? There's even wider examples of the split between election models and polling forecasts and all of these different things, not to mention prediction markets. I look at this stuff every day because it's part of my job, and it's something, you know, I'm a nerd and I like looking at this stuff. But one thing I will say is there's a big difference. And when I read all of these things, I'm constantly trying to figure out in my head sort of the summary of where everything stands. What do people actually believe? And I thought maybe something like that might be useful for you as well. So next week, we're going to present something to you that we'll have on, I think, until the election that will give you a sense as to where all of these models stand. Because I find a lot of people will take one poll or one polling forecast or one polling average and say, well, my guy is leading here and therefore I'm excited about it. You could do that and you could find examples. Both sides can find examples of how this looks really good for them at this point. But what does all of it say? How do we kind of sift that down to one number so that everybody can kind of understand and see where we are? We're going to reveal all of that next week and kind of give you a taste as to, you know, a little bit of an overall summary and picture as to where all of these people make, because the difference, the reason why there are differences is not because the polls that they're looking at are any different. They're all making individual assumptions based on fundamentals and which polls to include, which not to include, how to weight them. Everybody's doing that. So how do we look at all of this together? We'll give you that coming up next week. I think you're really going to enjoy it. For now, have a great weekend. Take a break from politics if at all you are able to. And we will see you next week on Stu Does America, the Glenn Beck program, and State of the Race.
Sehr gut, sehr gut, sehr gut.
Sehr gut?
Wieso Steuer ist sehr gut? Das sagen ganz viele.
Cool, wer sagt das?
Stiftung Warentest, Computerbild, Focus Money, Chip, Finanztipp, such dir was aus.
Mega, aber das ist doch bestimmt kompliziert.
Nö, einfach Foto von der Lohnsteuerbescheinigung machen und fertig.
Klingt sehr gut.
Ist sehr gut. Hol dir dein Geld zurück mit Wieso Steuer?